All right, welcome back to the deep dive. Today we're going to be looking at something that I think a lot of folks out there, especially our law student listeners, might find particularly interesting.
Yeah, this one should definitely resonate, especially if you're thinking about, getting paid for your hard work. And who isn't interested in that?
Exactly right. So we're going to be diving into this 1954 case from the California Supreme Court.
Oliver v. Campbell.
Oliver v. Campbell. Sounds pretty straightforward, right? Lawyer does some work, expects to get paid. What could be so complicated about that?
Well, you'd think so, wouldn't you? But as with so many things in the law, the devil's in the details. This one really gets into some fascinating questions about contract law and, how the courts try to balance different, sometimes competing interests.
Right. So this whole thing revolves around this idea of a fixed fee agreement, which I'm sure a lot of our listeners are familiar with.
Absolutely, yeah. A client hires a lawyer, they agree on a set price for the lawyer's services, everyone signs on the dotted line, and boom, you've got a contract.
Seems simple enough, but what happens when the client decides to fire the lawyer before the case is completely wrapped up?
Ah, yeah, that's where things start to get messy. Can the lawyer still demand the full fee even though they didn't technically finish the job? Or are they only entitled to a portion of the fee based on how much work they actually did?
And what if the lawyer argues that the work they did is actually worth way more than the original agreed upon fee? That's exactly the kind of scenario that played out in Oliver v. Campbell, and it led to some pretty interesting legal arguments, including some disagreements even among the Supreme Court justices themselves.
Yeah, we actually had something interesting pop up as we were prepping for this deep dive.
Oh, yeah. What's that?
So it seems like, depending on where you look for info on this case,
Mm.
you might get a slightly different picture of how things shook out in the end.
Really? So, like, different summaries of the case kind of leading to different conclusions.
Exactly. And it just goes to show, right? Always go back to the original source, the court's actual opinion. Don't just rely on summaries or analyses, because they can sometimes, get things a little twisted.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. Always got to go back to the source material, especially in law school, right? Can't be too careful. All right. So let's lay out the groundwork for Oliver v. Campbell. So we've got attorney John Oliver, who enters into this contract with a guy named Roy Campbell. Campbell needs legal representation for his divorce case. Pretty standard stuff.
Right, so they signed this agreement, fixed fee of $750 plus an extra $100 for costs. Seems pretty cut and dry.
Yeah, very straightforward. So Oliver starts working on the case, and this is where it gets interesting.
The trial itself ends up being a bit of a marathon. 29 days in court. That's a serious commitment of time and energy, right?
Oh, absolutely. And just when you think it's all about to wrap up, Campbell decides to, well, switch things up a bit.
He fires Oliver. Decides he's going to represent himself for the final stretch. Now, up to this point, Campbell had paid Oliver $450.
Out of the 750.
Correct. So Oliver's out there, he's put in all this work, the trial's practically over, and he's still owed a chunk of his fee. Makes sense that he'd be a little frustrated,
Yeah, I
right?
think anyone would be. So what does he do?
Well, Campbell actually passes away before everything gets settled, so Oliver ends up suing Campbell's estate. But here's the kicker. He doesn't just sue for the remaining $300 of the original fee. He goes for a much bigger amount, $10,000.
$10,000. Whoa. Okay, so he's not messing around. What's his reasoning for that?
His argument is that the original contract fee doesn't really reflect the true value of the extensive work he did on the case. 29 days of trial, remember. He's basically saying he deserves to be compensated based on the actual worth of his services, not just some arbitrary number they agreed on beforehand.
It's not just about the contract anymore. It's about fairness and reasonable compensation for the work performed, right?
Yeah, exactly. And that's where this case gets really juicy, because it forces us to grapple with a fundamental question. When a lawyer is fired without cause, can they ditch the original contract and go after the full market value of their work, even if it blows past the agreed-upon fee?
Right, so this isn't just about Oliver and Campbell anymore. This has implications for how these kinds of situations are handled throughout the legal profession, right?
You got it. So let's see what the California Supreme Court had to say about all this. The majority opinion, written by Justice Carter, lays out some important groundwork. They start with his general principle that if a lawyer is wrongfully fired, they have the option to basically rip up the contract, consider it null and void, and then they can go after what's called quantum meruit.
Quantum meruit.
Quantum meruit, it's Latin, of course.
Figures.
It basically means as much as he deserves. It's a legal concept that allows someone to recover the reasonable value of the services they provided, even if there wasn't a specific contract in place.
Okay, so at first glance, It seems like this is good news for Oliver, right? He was fired, so he should be able to argue that his time in court was worth way more than that remaining $300.
You'd think so, right? But here's where the specifics of the case, the nuances, really come into play. The majority opinion acknowledges this general right to go for quantum merit, but they also throw in a pretty significant caveat.
What's that?
They point out that Oliver had already substantially performed the work he was hired to do. Remember, the 29-day trial was done. He'd basically carried out the main part of the contract. So because of that, the court says his recovery is limited to whatever's left unpaid on the original contract. In this case, just the $300.
Hold on. So even though he was fired, the fact that he was so close to the finish line means he can't go after the full $5,000 he says he deserves.
That's right. The court's logic here hinges on this idea that the bulk of the contractual obligation had already been fulfilled. Justice Carter even spells it out pretty clearly in the opinion, saying the injured party may elect to rescind, sue in quantum merit, and retain payments received.
Okay, so that quote, it's acknowledging the right to seek the reasonable value of the work, but it's also highlighting that in Oliver's specific case, he was essentially stuck with the original terms of the contract.
Exactly. It's a super interesting point. Now, as you might imagine, not everyone on the court saw it exactly the same way. We've got this concurring opinion from Justice Edzins. He agrees with the final decision that Oliver should only get the $300, but his reasoning takes a slightly different path.
Oh, interesting. So how does he see it?
Well, Justice Edmonds basically argues that the original contract, the one they all signed, should be the main deciding factor in how much Oliver gets paid, especially since he'd already done almost all the work.
So it's kind of like a deal's a deal kind of perspective. Yeah. Like, they agreed to a price, they should stick to it.
You got it. And he's also worried about what could happen if quantum merit could always just override a fixed fee, especially when a job's practically done. He thinks it could make contracts less reliable, less predictable, you know, create uncertainty. So his opinion really underscores this desire for stability in contractual relationships. Like, we need to be able to rely on agreements, right?
Makes sense. You don't want people just backing out or renegotiating at the last minute. So two justices agree that Oliver's only entitled to the $300. Was there anyone who saw things differently?
Oh, absolutely. We've got a dissenting opinion from Justice Schauer, and he comes out swinging in favor of Oliver.
All right, lay it on me.
Justice Schauer basically says Campbell firing Oliver right before the final judgment was like a total rejection of the whole contract. Like, he just threw the agreement out the window. And because of that, Schauer argues Oliver should get the full market value of his services, the $5,000 that the trial court had determined was fair.
Wow, so that's a huge difference in opinion there. $300 versus $5,000, that's a pretty big gap. It really highlights how differently these justices interpreted the situation and applied the law.
No doubt. And it gets to the heart of some pretty fundamental legal concepts, like this idea of election of remedies.
Election of remedies? What's that all about?
So when Campbell fired Oliver, right, he essentially breached the contract. Oliver then had a choice to make, a legal path to choose. He could have sued Campbell for breach of contract, saying, hey, you broke our agreement, now I'm out some money. But if he did that, the contract would still be considered valid.
Okay, so he'd be suing based on the terms of the existing agreement.
Exactly. But that's not what Oliver chose to do. He went a different route. He decided to treat the contract as basically canceled because of the breach, and instead went after quantum merit, that reasonable value of his services. The key point here is that he couldn't do both. He couldn't say the contract's valid, pay me the rest, and also the contract's void, pay me what I'm worth. He had to pick one.
So it's like choosing which legal tool to use to get what he felt he was owed.
Right, an election of remedies.
Now, you mentioned earlier this idea of substantial performance and how it played a role in the majority's decision. Can you break that down a little more? I think it's a concept that might be tripping up some of our listeners.
Absolutely. And it's key to understanding why Oliver didn't get the full $5,000. Mm-hmm. This doctrine basically says that if you've completed the essential parts of a contract, even if you haven't done every little thing, you've still substantially performed.
Okay. And in this case, the 29-day trial was the main part of the deal, right?
That's right. The court saw that final judgment as, you know, relatively minor compared to the massive effort Oliver had already put in. So because he had essentially finished the job, he was limited to what the contract said, even though he was fired.
So it's all about how much of the work was done when the breach happened. It really makes you wonder, what if the trial had been just one day shorter? Would the outcome have been different? Where do you draw the line for substantial?
That's the million-dollar question, right? It shows you how these legal principles can sometimes get a little fuzzy around the edges.
Absolutely. So let's bring it back to our law student listeners. What's the big takeaway from Oliver v. Campbell? Like, what should they keep in mind when they're out there in the real world dealing with clients and fee agreements?
Timing. For lawyers working with these fixed fee contracts, when that client decides to end things, it makes all the difference. If it happens early on, you've got a better shot at getting the full market value of your work under that quantum merit idea. But Oliver v. Campbell shows us, if you're almost done with the job, you might be stuck with whatever the original contract says, even if it feels unfair.
So know your rights, protect yourself, and pay attention to the timeline.
Yep, that's the key.
Now, this case also brings up this really interesting tension between like the core values of contract law. The concurrence is all about upholding the sanctity of the agreement, you know, a deal's a deal. But the dissent is really concerned about the client potentially getting a sweet deal at the expense of the lawyer's hard work.
It's a classic legal dilemma, right?
Yeah.
Balancing competing interests.
For sure. So on one hand, you've got Justice Edmonds saying, look, we need to be able to rely on contracts. We can't just let people change the terms whenever they feel like it, especially at the last minute. And that makes sense. You need predictability in agreements.
Absolutely. But then, on the other hand, Justice Schauer's dissent raises this question of fairness. Like, is it right for a client to essentially get away with not paying the true value of a lawyer's work just because they fire them right before the finish line? It's a tough one. And both sides have good points.
It really is. Like, is it a windfall for the lawyer if they get more than the contract price? Or is it just fair compensation for the work they did? It's all a matter of perspective, I guess.
Exactly. Now, there's one more thing I wanted to touch on before we wrap things up. Mm. It's something we came across while we were researching this case. You know, we always try to be thorough in our deep dives.
Of course, due diligence and all that. What'd you find?
So there's this discrepancy between a couple of the sources we looked at. One source, a Perplexity analysis, claimed that Oliver was completely denied any recovery beyond the original $750 contract price.
Oh, wow. So they basically said he got nothing extra, even though he was owed that $300 balance.
Right, which is actually incorrect. And that's why it's so important to check your sources, especially in law.
Always double check, especially when there's money on the line.
Exactly. The Standard Brief, which is, you know, a pretty reputable source, correctly states that Oliver was indeed awarded the $300 that was still outstanding from the original contract.
So even though he didn't get the full $5,000, he at least got something for his trouble.
Precisely. But the point here is, don't take any source at face value. Always verify. Always go back to the primary source, the court's opinion, to make sure you're getting the full and accurate story.
Couldn't agree more. All right, so as we wrap up our deep dive into Oliver v. Campbell, what are the big takeaways? What are the key principles that really stand out to you?
Well, for me, this case really showcases how contract law can be both incredibly precise and surprisingly flexible at the same time. You've got this idea of quantum merit, which is all about ensuring fairness and reasonable compensation when it comes to performance doctrine, which can limit that recovery, especially when a job's nearly done.
It's like a balancing act, right? Trying to uphold the terms of a contract while also ensuring that people are treated fairly when things don't go as planned.
Exactly. And I think what Oliver v. Campbell really drives home is the importance of understanding the nuances, the details, the specific facts of each situation. Because as we've seen, the timing of a breach, the extent of the work completed, all these little things can have a huge impact on the outcome.
It's not just about knowing the rules. It's about knowing how to apply them in these messy real-world scenarios.
Exactly. And as a final thought, for all our listeners out there, I want you to consider this. How does a case like Oliver v. Campbell help us understand fairness and the enforcement of agreements when unexpected